let us now go, though, to the killing time, or study of that killing time. The killing time was a period of conflict in Scottish history between the Presbyterian Covenanter movement, based largely in the southwest of the country, and the government forces of Charles II and James VII. The period ran roughly from 1680 to 1688. After the restoration of King Charles II in 1660, so 20 years earlier, episcopacy was reintroduced into the Church of Scotland, the Presbyterian Church of Scotland, and the overthrowing of the Presbyterian form of organization favored by the Covenanters. Church ministers were confronted with a hard choice: accept the new situation or lose their livings. Although most conformed, up to a third of the ministry refused, many ministers chose voluntarily to abandon their parishes rather than wait to be forced out by the government. Most of the vacancies occurred in the southwest of Scotland, particularly strong in its covenanting sympathies. Some of the ministers also took to preaching in the open fields in conventicles, that which we're celebrating today, and these often attracted thousands of worshippers. The Scottish Privy Council, the governing council of that day, attempted to end the dissent in the form of the first indulgence of 1669, followed by a second in 1672. These allowed the ministers to return to their churches on condition that they remain silent on the issues dividing the Kirk. The Covenanters refused these indulgences because, one, they would not accept the indulgence for worshiping God by the license of the bishops because they had forsworn prelacy or episcopacy in taking the covenant and had declared the bishops to be anti-scriptural and anti-Christian. And to take license from them would be to proclaim their authority as legal, which they detested and abhorred. Secondly, they would not take the oath of supremacy because they could not in conscience allow any king or head of the church but Jesus Christ to allow a pope or a bishop to insinuate himself into the office of Christ would be a terrible thing. Number three, they would not pray for the king or swear by him because he was a persecutor of the church and thereby an enemy to God, because he had renounced the oath of God in the covenant, and until he repented, they would have nothing to do with him. Fourthly, being debarred all manner of liberty to worship God in public, and on the severest penalties forbidden to assemble themselves together, either in churches or in private families, and believing it at the same time their duty, according to the Scriptures, not to forsake assembling, they could not satisfy their consciences to obey man rather than God. The Stuart regime attempted to stamp this movement out with varying degrees of success. Fines were levied upon those who failed to attend the parish churches or the so-called king's curates. The death penalty was imposed for preaching at field conventicles. And so, Reverend Pockris and myself and Stephen, we could all be killed if we were caught after doing such a thing as this. Torture of suspects with the boot and thumb screws became a tactic of first resort. In 1678, 18 years after Charles returned, some 3,000 Lowland militia and 6,000 Highlanders, called the Highland Host, were billeted or housed in the Covenanting shires and plundered unwilling hosts. These policies provoked armed rebellions in 1666 and 1679, which were quickly suppressed. However, in 1680, Richard Cameron read publicly the Sanctior Declaration, renouncing all allegiance to the crown and opposing the succession of James, Duke of York. In response to this new element of outright political sedition, the Scottish Privy Council authorized extrajudicial field executions, that means executions without trial, to those caught in arms or those who refused to swear loyalty to the king. An example of this cruelty follows. The Wigtown Martyrs. Four female prisoners were held captive for their faith in Wigtown in May 1685. Margaret Maxwell, Agnes Wilson, Margaret Wilson, and Margaret McLaughlin. Margaret Maxwell was flogged through the streets and made to stand in the jugs, which was an iron collar, often chained to the outside of church walls for 1 hour each day for 3 days. All these days she stood in the jugs for an hour. There was hardly an open window or an open door in the town, and no children were allowed to gather around and gaze upon her. The hangman wished to shorten the hour in the jugs, but she told him, "Let the clock go on, for I am neither wearied nor ashamed." The youngest, at age 13, and sister of Margaret Wilson, who later died, Agnes, was released due to her father going all the way to Edinburgh to pay £100 sterling bond. He was unable at this time to also secure the release of his other daughter. They were a poorer family, and just he could redeem one daughter but not the other. From the prison dungeon in Wigton, the soldiers took Margaret McLaughlin, age 60, and young Margaret Wilson, age 16. Margaret McLaughlin, 60, and Margaret Wilson, 16, to the bank of the Blaidnock Burn, which flows out into the Solway Firth, which was a river, on May 11, 1685. The burn fills with the rushing tide of the Solway that was said to come in faster than a horse can gallop. It was a long, low area that the tide would come in very quickly on. It was also said to come in with a tidal wave about 6 feet in height. Two stakes were driven in the Firth, one a little further out than the other, the elderly Margaret being tied to the outermost stake and the younger Margaret to the one nearest the bank. This was done by the soldiers to horrify the younger girl into recanting as she would watch the older woman drowned. As the rising tide engulfed Widow McLaughlin, Grierson of Logg taunted the younger Margaret. "What do you see now?" he asked her from the bank. "I see Christ in one of his members wrestling there," Margaret answered. Then she added, "Do you think we are the only sufferers?" "No, it is Christ in us who suffers. He sends none of us to fight alone." Then Margaret Wilson began to sing the 25th Psalm. "My sins and faults of youth do thou, O Lord, forget. In loving kindness think on me, and for thy goodness great." As the waters came over her head, the soldiers pulled her out enough to let her speak, and they asked her to pray for the king, which the Covenanters could not do. She responded that she wished the salvation of all men, the damnation of none. They plunged her into the water again, pulled her back out to force her to change her mind. "Oh, Margaret, say it," some pleaded from the shore. Her reply was, "Lord, give him repentance, forgiveness, and salvation, if it would be thy holy will." Grierson of Logg grew impatient and demanded she say the oath. She groaned, "No, no, no sinful oaths for me. I am one of Christ's children. Let me go." With all that, the soldiers moved back to the waiting crowd on the shore until it was over. Thus endeth a description of the killing times.